God calls us to wholeheartedly live for Him, to love people in the way that is truly centered on others. As we read 1 Corinthians 13, it's a love that bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Today on Gateway to Joy, Elizabeth Elliot shares another lesson in following the Master, the one who came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give His life as a ransom for many. Here's Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, talking again today with my friend Gail Summers. We've been discussing mothers and the question of whether a mother should go out to work. And one question, Gail, which has come to me recently in several different letters, is whether or not a mother who does believe that the scriptures tell her that she should stay home and take care of her children, and she is doing that, and she's doing it as faithfully as she can, but she is being criticized by the church because she's not doing enough in the church. They tell her she should be teaching a Sunday school class or a Bible class, or she should be cooking for the church supper or doing something which is of service. And women often say to me, I really want to serve the Lord, but all I'm doing now is being a mother. What would you say to them?
Well, I want to say, first of all, that we had previously talked about a passage from 1 Timothy 5, and when Paul talks about what Christian women should have been doing in order to get on the widow's list, how they should have been spending their time, I would like for us to look at what he says are the good deeds. He says the woman has to be a certain age, over 60. We're in 1 Timothy 5, verse 9. No widow may be put on the list of widows unless she is over 60, has been faithful to her husband, and is well known for her good deeds. We should pause here and say, okay, now this is what the church should look at as her good deeds. This is where we're looking for a woman's service. Well known for her good deeds, such as bringing up her children. First on the list, bringing up her children. Then the list goes on, showing hospitality, washing the feet of the saints, helping those in trouble, and devoting herself to all kinds of good deeds. Look at how Paul moves from a woman's responsibility to her husband. He comes first, faithful to her husband, and then should have good deeds such as bringing up her children. And I think that, unfortunately, some people may have a mistaken notion about just what kind of time and energy is required in bringing up children. Now, there are some women, I know women, who have energy to spare. They probably should have been twins or triplets, but they turned out to be just one woman, so they have lots and lots of energy. So they manage to do the things that they need to do with their children, and they have time left over to do other things at church. There are those type of women. I am not one of those type of women. I am the type of woman who finds all of her energies pretty much soaked up by being with my children. And I wouldn't want anybody in the church to be critical of that simply because it was not teaching a Sunday school class or serving on a committee. I would want recognition from the church, the same type of recognition that I think the Apostle Paul would give me if he walked in the door right now. He would say, that woman is bringing up her children, and that is at the top of the list of the good deeds that I would be characterized by. So I am not too sympathetic with those who think that simply because a woman doesn't have a job outside the home and she has lots of time, that means that she has the energy to do lots of other things in the church. My experience of raising children is that first on the list is time, just time being with the children.
It's not a matter of quality, but of
it's
quantity.
It's time.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly. It is time learning the child, learning the personality of the child. I have three very different children. And if I had stopped at having one child, I would have thought that all children were like her. And then I went on to the next one. There are two types of children. Then I went on to the third one. I thought, it's limitless now. I see that there really are all different types of children. And each one who comes along has to be learned. I have to know what type of discipline is appropriate for each child. The three children I have respond very differently to discipline.
Can you illustrate that?
Yes, right. My oldest daughter, Geneva, is a very strong and independent person. And the type of discipline that works best with her is strength coming. It's strength matching strength with Geneva. So that if she puts herself in a situation where she has to be disciplined, I have to be very strong and firm with her so that she knows I mean business. And she is really tough, so that she is not easily intimidated. She is not intimidated by me. And so there has to be a real show of strength on my part. Now, when I move on to my son is very fragile. Very, very fragile. And if I even look at him in the wrong way, he is collapsed on the floor in a heap. He can't bear a strong word. He can't bear a strong look. So that what works with Geneva, what looks like weakness to my daughter Geneva, is really the only way I can approach my son. It has to be quiet. It has to be steady. It has to sound like weakness to Geneva. If she were listening in the other room, she would think, boy, she's not being very tough with Gary. But Gary, it's all that he can bear. It would be all that he could bear. Now, if I didn't just have a lot of time sitting with those kids, looking at them, listening to them, talking to them, seeing how they respond, I wouldn't know that there are lots of differences in personality. And I would hope that the church understands that raising
up children is a full-time job,
right,
isn't it? It's demanding, it's consuming, and as you've said, it is fulfilling when it's done for God, when it's recognized as a vocation, as a calling. Now, this same passage, I think, might have some bearing on the woman who says, well, I've done my job. I have raised my children. I'm 40 years old now. They're all grown up or late teenage, and I've got two in college. And so now I have time to go back to school and get a degree, or to learn underwater macrame, or to go on a cruise, or do my own thing, or get a job, take some training and get myself a really interesting and fulfilling job. Does she have any responsibilities still under this list that you've read to us from 1 Timothy?
Well, I believe that she does very clearly. And I think that the fact that women have either overlooked this passage or have rejected it accounts for a lot of just the lukewarmness that we see in church life today, because houses are empty. Women are not home. Women are not there to be showing hospitality, washing the feet of the saints, helping those in trouble, and devoting herself to all kinds of good deeds. They're out getting degrees and having interesting jobs. They are not there in their homes, even though their children may be grown. The children are not there needy as they were when they were young. But the rest of the world is needy. The church is needy. The neighborhood is needy. The block is needy. The neighbor next door is needy. I don't think that this really releases us when our children are grown up. If anything, it makes it clear that we are to be about being vessels of grace to first our family, our husbands, our children, and then the world. It's an outward reach. It's not inward. It's not, you do this, and then you can do this for yourself. If you do this for your children, then you can do this for yourself.
But
it's
don't
not
I
that
owe
picture.
Something to myself, Gail? People say that to me.
I'm sure they do, and I've heard it too. My own experience of feeling good about myself. If I ever looked at myself and thought, I feel really good about myself, if I backed up, I would see that the reason I feel good about myself is because I have done something for somebody else. That's what makes me feel good about myself. Doing something that will earn me lots of money or a big reputation, that I can't imagine that making me feel good about myself. But doing something for someone else does make me feel good about myself. If we're so worried about that, I think there's hope. I think we can feel good about ourselves, but let's do it in the biblical
way. Jesus said, it is more blessed to give than to receive.
Right, and the receiving comes after the giving. I'm really quite convinced that that is the pattern, that's the biblical notion of feeling good about yourself or doing something for yourself if you're concerned in that way. I'm not sure we have to be. I'm not sure as a Christian that I've ever really felt comfortable asking myself, shouldn't I do something for myself? I suppose there are Christians who feel like that's a valid question, and I have never felt that it was a valid question.
I don't think we really owe ourselves anything.
No,
we owe God everything,
right.
And we owe everybody else, but not ourselves.
Right, and I think the reason that we can say that without fear, the reason that I can say that without fear, is that I would have to be a complete dimwit not to see what God has done for me, what He has done, in my family by redeeming most of my family members out of nothingness and ugliness, and what God has done for me. Do I need to worry about myself? No, I don't need to worry about myself. God is obviously concerned about me. He has given me gifts. He is looking out for me. He has worked in my life. He has moved me from darkness to light. And I think my family background makes this very important to me. I can see that
contrasts are stark, aren't
yes,
they?
Yes, God has done wonderful things for me. Mm-hmm. I am good in good hands. I don't need to do anything good for myself.
Would you say mothering is a service to the community? Sometimes women say, well, mm-hmm. I'd like to be of service to my community, mm-hmm. but I don't have time because I'm just a mother.
Well, I would say it's probably the service to the community. It may not be a service to your present community, but some community will benefit from those adults who have grown up in the nurture and love of a mother who was there for them. I can't imagine service to a community any more important than raising children. Of course, it doesn't raise money. It doesn't. It's not visible. There's nothing that really the community will be able to see. That particular community in which she lives. But I think a woman, any mother, has got to be willing to have a long-range view with children. Because if you're looking at the dirty diapers, the peanut butter smeared all over the wall, the incessant questioning, the fights that children get into, if you're looking at that and thinking, so this is what I have unleashed on the world? Is this my service to the community? It's frightening. It's spooky. But I think if you're willing to take a long-range view and say, I will give myself to these children, I will do all that I can to help them to grow up as knowledgeable, loving Christian adults, I can do everything that I can do, then the community in which they live will be benefited and will be enriched.
Thank you so much, Gail. And please tune in again. We'll have Gail Summers talking some more about mothers and working.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliott. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.